The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest is a return guest, tacit mentor and friend, Lee Fredrickson of Hinge Marketing. Lee, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we're going to be discussing the same stuff we usually talk about when we get together, and that is, visible expertise, developing that visible expert platform, the subject matter expert platform, but we're going to take a little deeper dive than usual. But before we get started, remind people who you are and what Hinge Marketing does.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm a psychologist by training, but I'm the managing partner of Hinge. And we do branding and marketing and increasing the visibility, really, of professional services firms. That the accountants, consultants, lawyers, technology people who make up the workforce that really drive intellectual things forward.
Okay, so you help people take their IP and develop literally a platform out of it.
That's right. Okay. Grow their business.
There you go. Well, growing the business is a good thing.
Yes.
Particularly for those who deserve it. So we're going to talk about several aspects of this. But, one of the ones that fascinates me for a variety of reasons is websites. Because oftentimes when I go to a company's website, I have a very difficult time discerning what exactly they do, who they do it for, and how they deliver it. So you've got kind of a 5-point plan for particularly professional services, but I think it applies broadly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's walk through those, if you will, please.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And the first one is understanding a clear messaging about who are you, what do you do, who do you do it for, and why in the world would anyone want to work with you? And it's surprising how often folks just miss that point. They just get that wrong. The big issue there is they try to do too much. They try to be too much to too many people, and they end up being nothing to anyone. So if you can't say clearly in a few words or a phrase what you do, who you do it for, and why they should work for you, you are probably missing business.
Exactly. And you also go through a process of differentiation for companies that helps them in this particular process, but we'll touch on that maybe a little later on. Second part is, I like the way you phrase this, responsive design.
Yes. Well, one of the things that's happened is that the number of people who are accessing websites and so forth online using their mobile device has skyrocketed, and that's just gone past completely. It's gone past the desktop access. So you have to have a design that will work on either one, and these days that's what's called responsive design. And when you design it, you basically design a website so that it works on mobile. It looks one way on mobile. On a tablet, it looks another way. On a full screen, it looks a third way. So it's responsive to whatever screen you're on.
Okay, so if they went to my website and it's not responsive, you might see like the lower left part of my jaw or something.
Right. You see the whole website, but you have to really scroll in and work to get anything to it. And it makes it just so much easier for it. And these days, it's even to the point where Google understands whether or not a website is responsive. And if you aren't mobile friendly, that knocks you down in search results. So they're less likely to get there in the first place. And they'll have a more difficult experience trying to understand what you do.
A little harder to find.
That's right. Exactly.
Not a good thing.
No.
You and I have discussed this other one, and we both generate a fair amount of verbiage in a variety of formats, but educational content.
It's very important. And the reason it's so important is it really tells people what you do, how you can help them, your educational content. In the absence of that, it's impossible really to communicate almost what you do and how you can really help someone. So if they know they're in the right place, yeah, you can generally in the right area, then looking at your educational content helps them understand what is your area of expertise, what are the kinds of problems you can solve. And educational is important because people need to understand your level of expertise, and just telling them you're an expert to something, it doesn't really do anything.
Well, that, you, and, you know, people who generate content, in my experience, fall into three buckets. One, people who can't write and probably shouldn't. Two, people who are regurgitating. Mm-hmm. And three, people who are either generating something new or taking something existing and putting a new spin on it. Content curation, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I think the real test of it, is there any insight here? If what you're saying is conventional wisdom, things that everybody already knows, you're not adding any value and you're wasting time, you're just cluttering things up. So if you can't say something that adds a new perspective, a new take on it, applies it to a new area, then you're just, adding junk to the internet.
Right. And, you know, I get information from a variety of sources, and I see these, you know, five tips for a great, you know, LinkedIn profile. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure, I'll go look at that. But it's stuff that, you know, I've been teaching for 7 years.
Yes, yeah. And four of them are already out of date because everybody in the world knows about them already. So and that's, you know, that's actually a real danger because you don't want to overpromise. If you say five tips and you come up and it's just, nothing there, then what have you communicated? You communicated, I don't really know anything, you don't.
Yep. Yeah. So SEO, I recommend to people on LinkedIn profiles, I recommend this highly. On websites, I'm a little leery. I recommend people use industry jargon throughout their LinkedIn profile because more often than not, that's what people will search on. Does the same apply to websites or extrapolate on the SEO side?
Yeah, the world of SEO has really evolved in the last few years. The search engines are getting smarter and smarter. And there's a concept in SEO that's called user intent. What is a user actually trying to find out here? And the key to successful SEO is making sure that you understand what's the question you're answering for the user and do a better job of answering that question than anything else that a user would find. So Google what you think the term is that people would look for. And if it shows up, read what shows up and write something that's better than that. And if you can't do that, you're not really improving your SEO.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finally, engagement tools. I know that when I go to hingemarketing.com, there's always something to download.
Right, right. And what you're looking to do there is an engagement tool does two things. One is it demonstrates to someone what you do, what kinds of problems you solve, what you do. Even if they don't download it, they see, oh, you have something on, you know, five ways to improve your LinkedIn profile. That must be something you know something about. Or you have something about a new regulation that's coming out and what to expect and how the agencies are going to handle that. That says, okay, you know something about that. And assuming you deliver on that. But what you're doing is you're exchanging contact information for that download. And that allows you then to form a two-way communication where you offer to educate the person further about what you do and your areas of expertise. And in return, they're tolerating your emails.
Bingo. And tolerating, yes. But, you know, I look forward to yours. I don't always read everything that's there, but there's usually at least one article in there that I consider kind of a must read.
Yeah. Well, I use tolerate a little bit with a little bit of a sense of humor to it because people are so busy these days that it has to be something that's of interest. Otherwise, they'll just unsubscribe and delete and,
right.
and so on and so forth. So you have to ask yourself, am I adding some value here? And usually that comes from, am I educating someone? Am I giving a new perspective, a different way of thinking about that, a new piece of data that people might not have seen? And if you're doing that with each of your communications, then you're really actually developing that relationship. And that relationship is, I have some expertise, or we have some expertise, we're sharing it with you. And in return, you're giving us your valuable attention and your understanding, and beginning to understand who we are and how we can help you.
Mm-hmm. And most importantly, when the need occurs on the recipient side, you're top of mind.
Yes. Not only when it occurs on the recipient side, but when someone turns to someone else and says, hey, do you know anybody who can help me with this problem? They'll say, oh, yeah, Mark Amtower can, or Lee Fredrickson can, or this person can help you. So you're building your reputation for having a certain piece of expertise in the marketplace, and you never know who they're going to turn to, which person they're going to turn to, which is one of the keys to the power of the internet now, is you can spread those ideas so widely, so easily.
Yep. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Lee and I will be back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our conversation may get a little more animated today because this is something that both Lee and I get a little excited about. My guest is Lee Fredrickson of Hinge Marketing. You can find them at hingemarketing.com. I suggest you do so. There's a lot of stuff. We just talked about the engagement tools and downloading. There's a lot of stuff at Hinge that you can download that will help you execute on the things that we're discussing. So migrating on. This is something we've also discussed ad nauseum to some, but we're never done with it. And that's expertise as a differentiation strategy. What do you mean by this?
Well, one of the things that is the biggest challenges for professional services is what's different about us. And, you know, some things don't matter to clients that much, like client service. Yeah, if you give lousy customer service and you annoy people, yeah, they won't work with you. But
they'll get around.
Yeah, and it gets around. But, you know, the reality is they don't hire you because of your client service. They hire you because of what you know, what problems you can solve, how you can help them. And that is the essence of expertise. That's what specialization is all about. If you specialize in something, there's the assumption that you know more about it and you can help people solve the problems that are around it. So I think really expertise is the top way to differentiate a professional services firm. It's the number one criteria usually on a selection. It is in 75% of the cases, it's some variation of expertise is why someone selects a firm, a particular firm. So it's pretty central to what you are. It's like cars to General Motors, you know, it's your product.
Yeah. Our mutual friend, Bob Davis, put it to me a different way in a conversation we had several years ago, but it still resonates. Companies should develop a competitive advantage, but those who are really, really good at something develop a sustainable competitive advantage.
That's right.
And that's really your goal. But that sustainable competitive advantage has to be demonstrable to the public that you serve, and it has to be needed by the public you serve.
And that's right. You know, and there's a, you know, you've heard the expression about an empty suit. You know, somebody who really doesn't have anything. And that's a problem with expertise. You can't tell when you meet someone at an event whether they have expertise or they don't. You know, it's not something you can see. It's invisible. So the only way you can really make the expertise invisible is to demonstrate it somehow through something you write, through something you talk about, through something you share. And that's how people understand, okay, he knows what he's doing. This woman, this man knows something about something that can help me.
Okay. types of expertise. I mean, we have in IT, Lord knows how many different types of technical areas of expertise there are. But you brought up others before, the IP side, the process side.
That's right. I think there's three big types of expertise that it tends to fall in. One is the technical knowledge, as you pointed out. You understand a technical aspect of something, and that's important and pretty straightforward and obvious. But there's also the process of how you go about doing something. And we see that more and more with the advent of automation in some of the professional services, where you're adding value and you're adding expertise by how you take data, how you manage it, how you do something, how you process it, that's unique and different from other people. Now, saying that you have a unique process and say our process is first we gather information, then we come up with a plan, then we execute it, and then we adjust. What is that? Nothing. That's not really the process. It's got to be something more substantial that you can point to really to help people understand that. And then, of course, there's a third type of expertise. That's an expertise around a certain type of client and the issues that they're facing. Whether that's a position, such as a procurement officer, you know all about procurement, or whether it is a particular agency or domain expertise that you know a lot. So it's generally one of those: technical experience, a particular vertical or organization, or this kind of unique process.
Yeah, and on the client knowledge, oftentimes when I'm talking to program managers, regarding how they add subcontracting team members, that client knowledge comes into play. Do they have deeper relationships than us at this agency? And do they have the relationship? Federal agencies are everywhere, right? So
yeah,
these guys may have one out in, the middle of Montana, which would be a key part of this particular contract and the execution of the contract. So you have that proximity, you have the client knowledge, et cetera. So,
and the value of the relationship, as you point out, is sometimes how it translates into understanding of the client and their issues,
exactly.
Not just the person you know.
Yeah.
People can always leave.
When an agency is deploying a technical solution to an issue, it helps to understand the mission, the players involved. All of those elements come into play if you want to get a satisfactory review upon completion of that contract.
Exactly.
So the happier they are, the better you will look.
Yeah. And, it's very interesting, Mark, there, because what people use to select someone they work with oftentimes is different than what they come to value during the relationship. If you pick the top thing that people are looking for when they're selecting, they're looking for expertise. Can you understand that? Can you do it? But when you get to what's the value that I really got, usually the value is they helped me make better decisions. They anticipated issues that I didn't even think about, and they provided a solution ahead of the time. So it's that kind of that depth of understanding that allows you to not only respond, but to anticipate and help solve things before they come up, that is really the deep value a lot of times in these kinds of relationships.
Right. So, kind of on top of that one, marketing yourself as an expert seems somewhat presumptuous, but if you don't and you are an expert, nobody's going to do it for you.
That's right. That's that invisible point,
Right.
Yeah.
So you have some research on this that I've seen before, and I find it fascinating. So why don't you run through that for us?
Well, the top reason, if you sort of ask the research question, how is it that you come to think that this person is an expert? Well, the top reason, and it should come to no surprise as anyone, is that you come highly recommended by friends and colleagues. The people in the marketplace know who you are and know what you know. That is the top. That's over half the time, but almost 60% of the time, 57% of the time, it's that. That's one of the things that they do. But importantly, interestingly, the second level, and this is at 38%, so it's a significant factor, is they effectively have the ability to take something that's complicated and simplify it, make it understandable. I mean, you know, you can have a lot of technical knowledge, and if you talk to a technical person, sometimes you sort of understand something, and then you talk to a so-called expert, and at the end you understand it less than when you started. You know, that person may be the most brilliant expert in it, but it won't do you much good. And it's the person who really understands it. If you can simplify it, you understand it. If you can't simplify it, you probably don't really understand it.
Right. So, and you know, there's countless examples every day in this. And I'm not going to get into the political side, but during this campaign, that has been demonstrated time and time again.
Yes, in just about every aspect of life.
Yeah. And that's not a red statement. It's not a blue statement. It's not a green statement. It's not a Gary Johnson statement. Although in Gary's case, it could be. But there's a couple other elements in here that I find intriguing as well.
Yeah, the third one is that you're a problem solver. In other words, you've got a track record of success of actually solving problems. And this is where you think of your what sort of projects have you had in the past? What problems have you solved in the past? What can you point to and say, I've done that? And if you can say that, some things by the fact that you've done them, that establishes your credentials right there. And that's past performance. That's what we all know. Everybody knows that. And interestingly, though, the actual ability to simplify something is on the same level as past performance in terms of convincing someone you're an expert. So It's not that, you know, it's trivial. It's to be able to do both of those. Then you really have something.
Well, and then you also have the ability to take that complex subject that may be inexplicable outside that agency, make it understandable so people can go, oh, yeah, we had similar issue over here, but
exactly.
I didn't look at it that way.
Yep, exactly, so, to be able to translate it that way.
We're going
to
take a quick break before we go to the final two items on this particular list. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back with Lee right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Lee Fredrickson of Hinge Marketing. You can find Lee at hingemarketing.com. You can also find him on LinkedIn. I suggest you look for him in both places. So marketing yourself to an expert, two more items.
Right. The next one is really, it blew my socks off when I saw it because I expected it to be important, but not that important. It's 31% of the people said this is a primary thing that convinces someone that they're that someone is an expert, and that is they inspire confidence when they speak. I have confidence just listening to them. Think about that. You know, if you translate that into other words, you may think bedside manner. You know, they can approach problem calmly, systematically. You make it feel you're in good hands just by talking to them. Mm-hmm. And people that have the gift for doing that have a real advantage in terms of communicating their expertise. Now, obviously, you have to have something behind it. So if all you have is bedside manner, that doesn't get you only so far. And which kind of gets me to the last item, which is they've published things in prestigious publications. So you go to whatever the top journal is in your particular discipline, and they're published there regularly. That's one thing people look at is, yeah, they're an expert. They publish things. I can talk to them, and I feel confident. I believe them.
Yeah. The only problem with that is that several of the publications seem to be going by the wayside because readership is down, advertising dollars are down,
yes,
and they are not sustainable. You know, probably 70% of the publications that I've been in over the last 30 years are gone.
Oh.
and I don't want to take credit for that.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, but it happens. But yeah, but you know, if you keep the hard copy, number one, you have a little bit of track record there. But a lot of the information that you generate can also be regenerated, repurposed, and you know, your own white papers, your own case studies, your own blogs, so you can revisit it and cite the original source.
Yeah.
So.
And people, you know, digest information differently. Some people are primarily verbal, and you know, you have things like webinars and podcasts that are really picking up in terms of popularity too, that as another way of consuming information. So,
and you have an email out today on video too.
Yes, so, exactly.
And not that people will be listening to this today. I do record a couple of days in advance, but that's kind of beside the point. But, you know, I don't even know. Do you know how many publications you've been in at this point?
No, I'm afraid I don't. Okay. I've kind of lost
I know
track.
I have a rough idea of how many I've been quoted in, and it's in, you know, the 250 to 300 range.
Right.
And oftentimes that's one quote being picked up in three or four other publications.
Yeah.
And if it's a hot topic, that happens. But oftentimes it's from a publication contacting you because you are visible in a particular area. Doesn't mean you're necessarily the right person or the perfect person for it, but you are the person they found.
Yeah. And that's a great point, is that, you know, just like everybody else, you talked about all the pressure on publications and journalists. Journalists are very busy people. So what do they do when they're looking for a source? They go to, where's the easiest place to find it? Let me Google it.
Let me check it right now if it's a business issue, LinkedIn.
Yeah, let's go to LinkedIn. Yep. Let me find out who is writing and speaking and talking about this.
Yep. I'm going to back burner one of our topics to a little later on because we've migrated into the content marketing side. And I know you guys take usually a much more scientific approach than I do. You actually do a lot of research. I predicate a lot of mine on frontline experiential activity. I love it when the research, you know, backs up what I write. And it's never going to be a solid fit, but it's usually relatively close. But, you know, one of the things that I've told, you know, hundreds of people at this point to go to and download is The Visible Expert. I think that's your magnum opus to date, at least from my perspective. But you've got a lot of other stuff out there. Give our audience here a feel for the breadth of that and a little bit on the research you do, because you're in the middle of a research project right now, too.
Right, right.
So give them a little bit of feel for that, and we'll drive them to your website for the new research.
Right. Well, this is something we do keep track of, about how many firms and buyers of professional service, and we just passed 15,000 individual firms and professional service buyers that we've researched. And what we have learned is that there are certain things that are associated with high growth, with success. And those same things are also associated with a high level of profitability and, as it turns out, a value of the firm. So the things you do to make you grow fast are also the things you do to make you more profitable and make you more valuable as a firm. And those really get down to speaking to the issues that are of relevance to your target audience. And you need to understand what those are. And the kinds of things to write about usually are, we talk about an issue. And when we talk about an issue, we're talking about something that's affecting your target audience. It's not going to go away tomorrow. It's a challenge, like how to do more in an uncertain and shrinking budget environment. Challenge probably isn't going away next week.
Right.
And it's something that a lot of people are struggling with. And if you have new ideas and insights to that, and there's something about your service that helps a person do that, that might be a good candidate as an issue for you. to write about that. And there's all sorts of things you can write about an issue like that. You can write, you can spend a career on a single issue. And understanding which issues you should talk about and which issues you shouldn't is one of the keys to really effectively marketing your organization. Because if you get the issue right and you have real value to add, it can have a lightning, like lightning striking effect on an organization. I've seen it over and over.
But, you know, when I write, on Google, on my blog, in Wash Tech, where those are the three primary vehicles I use in newsletter that I send out to.
And a darn fine one, I might add.
Thank you. But, you know, the feedback I get is what pushes me. When I speak the same things, there's certain audiences that I love where to speak to. Northern Virginia Tech always has an interactive audience. AFSCEA always has an interactive audience. APMP, the Association for Proposal Managers, also has, you know, an audience that gives you feedback, pushes your envelope, makes you think. I know you write a lot. Do you get out to speak frequently?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I know we do. I'm talking about you.
Yeah. No, I do.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
Because
you have several other people who go out and Sylvia and Liz. And
We have a whole team. Personally, I probably speak 3 to 5 times a month.
Okay.
So I get the opportunity to do that, and there's nothing as energizing as getting a question you can't answer.
Yeah.
And
I love that.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Weird, but I love it.
It's usually a good question, and once you go after it, that's where the real insight comes, because it's something that people are struggling with, and if you can't answer it, that means it's a good question to research. And that's the thing about research. I always tell people, good research will generate more questions than it answers.
Yeah, and you know, I will promise them something slightly different. I'll tell them, if I can't answer this, likelihood is I know someone that can, and I'll hook you up with them. Again, you know, I know people who are out there who are experts in pretty much everything in the government market. And it's nice to be able to draw on that gene pool, very similar to what we were talking about. And I don't know if it was online or offline, but getting together with other subject matter experts and just, you know, playing in that sandbox for a couple hours.
Exactly. Well, I was talking to a colleague about this very topic just this morning. And, you know, there's a couple of kind of experts to develop relationships. One is people who are in the same area as you are, because you benefit from helping each other. You each benefit from that. And the other is people who are in kind of similar areas, but adjacent areas, just the kind of the friend next door. And both of them help you broaden your environment, broaden your perspective on things.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We're going to take our final break here. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Again, you can find Lee at hingemarketing.com, H-I-N-G-E marketing.com. There's a lot of information there. And if you have to give up your name and email address to get it, just do it. He's not going to share your email with, you know, Putin, and you won't read about it on WikiLeaks. But you'll get some really, really good stuff. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with my friend and tacit mentor. And I say tacit mentor because Lee is a mentor to me, because I read a lot of his stuff. And when we get together for conversations like this, it's just amazing the kinds of stuff that come up during the show and between takes. And it's just a blast. So thank you again for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
Always a good time. So let's in the last segment here, let's talk about the role of social networks in developing that subject matter expert, the visible expert platform, and disseminating information, getting feedback, etc. What are your favorite playgrounds in social media?
Well, I would say my favorite playground is LinkedIn. That's the one I'm most comfortable about, and it's kind of a great default network. If you don't know which one you should be on, it's probably LinkedIn is the one. But others also have a different role. And you can, as an organization, you can go after multiple social networks, and it doesn't have to be one person.
Right.
The organization as a whole can share it.
And should.
And should, yeah. And sometimes you find out things that, you know, interesting relationships that you didn't know existed. That, for example, if you're trying to reach private equity people, you know, Twitter is a good place to do it. You know, who knew? Well, you research it, you find out where people are, where they're spending their time, and that's where you go. It's just like, it's perfectly analogous to researching conferences. Which conferences should you go to? You go to the wrong conference, you're going to waste your time.
And money.
And money.
And you can make more money, but you can't get back that time.
Yeah.
So.
Indeed.
So what do you use LinkedIn for? You do, you know, one of the things that irritates me about people that have found posting on LinkedIn is that I'll look at their profile and their last post, the last thing they wrote on LinkedIn is from 2014.
Right, exactly.
You aren't
exactly.
That way.
They're on top of it. Yes. Well, you know, there's really a couple of different things that you can get from a social network. One of those is it's a way of making your content, the things that you're doing, your thought leadership, and making that more visible, getting it out there where people can see it. And if they're interested, they can, you know, they can follow up and they can take a look at it. So it does that. The other thing it does is it provides a way of interacting with people, of networking. And you can use the social networks, LinkedIn, as just as you would a networking event. You know, you meet someone, you give something of value, you exchange information, you get to know someone. So it works the same way as face-to-face networking does. It's just much easier in terms of time, commitment, dollars. You're not buying lunch all the time, and you're not forcing someone to take an hour away from their work just to have an interaction with you.
But if there is definitely synergy there, then you've developed that knowledge that this is time, that this coffee time will be worthwhile. This
Absolutely.
Lunchtime will be worthwhile.
Yeah, there's nothing better than developing a relationship online and then meeting the person face-to-face at the next conference.
So how many times a week do people ping you and say, hey, let me take you out to lunch?
Well, the out to lunch isn't so much these days. And, you know, you got to work pretty darn hard to get me out to lunch. I'm a busy guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are busy. As a matter of fact, I don't know anyone who's not busy. And if they are, why? So the question is then, what's the most valuable use of your time? What's the easiest thing to do? What's the most direct route? And more social networks are really addressing that need.
Yeah. And, you know, among the things that I do, and I have to make a new laundry list because I had one that turned into quite a good post a while ago, top five things I do on LinkedIn. That has altered because the platform's altered.
Yeah.
But one thing hasn't changed, and that's I always look at people who viewed my profile.
Mm-hmm.
And I review them, and then, you know, I'm looking for any sort of synergy there. If there is synergy, I'll do an in-mail and say, saw you looked at my profile, you do this, I do this, you know, we should take 5 minutes and get on the phone, not, you know, let's go out for coffee. I want to explore it on the phone first.
Right. And that's the thing about the social networks. You don't need to beat around the bush. You can go, you know, directly to what's the benefit here? What are we trying to accomplish?
Right.
And I think that's the purity of that, I think, is something that a lot of people appreciate, especially busy people.
Yeah. And, you know, the 2 years ago, October 14, they altered the functionality of groups, and the discussion areas took a fairly significant dive as a result. A lot of people aren't interacting nearly as much as they used to in the discussion area. But one of the things I do with groups is the same thing with people who viewed my profile.
Mm-hmm.
I click on that member button and I start scrolling through. And
sure.
If you scroll, you know, if you're totally in sync with that group, you're going to have a bunch of first degrees. Scroll past them to the second degree people and start taking a look at them. These can be extraordinarily valuable connections for you as well.
Yeah, and one of the things that you talk about on groups here, I'm glad you brought that up. It reminded me of another point here, is that because there's so many different groups, you can get much closer to what the real area of interest is and what the real area of overlap. So I don't necessarily, I don't spend a lot of time in the very, very large groups where, I mean, it's like an association that has 100,000 members.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people in there but that have the same interest, but how are you going to find them?
There's a 500,000 people in the email marketing group.
Right, exactly, you know. Exactly.
I don't have time to scroll that many people on LinkedIn. It's not going to let me anyway.
That's right. Give me a group with 3,000 people who do just exactly the right thing. Then you're talking.
Right. And there are a couple of groups out there for, quote, thought leaders. I'm not convinced they're particularly well-managed. There's a couple that are much better managed than others. My friend Mitchell Levy, I think, runs one. Mm-hmm. And I think you know Mitchell. I certainly hope you do.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, that's the other factor. Is the group managed well?
Yeah.
And if you don't find the exact right group, consider starting one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's sort of the beauty, is that the level of effort to get started and to try something out is fairly low. Now, I would, you know, harking back to your earlier point, I would caution people that don't just do something, set it up and abandon it. You know, that's not going to do you really much good.
When you post on LinkedIn, you post frequently. How often do you look to see if there's comments on your post?
Well, I have all the automatic things on that alert me when there is.
Exactly. And you do that because?
Because I want to respond to each and every time someone
Bingo.
Does it.
Yeah.
So every one that comments represents 10 or 100 that saw it and saw something about it.
Exactly. So if you and that's the other thing that irritates me, you know, people who either write for trade publications or post on LinkedIn or blog, if they're not looking at their comments and responding to the comments, you're not a thought leader, you're a pontificator.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, exactly.
The feedback is where rubber meets the road.
Yeah, it's like you go to a networking event and a person introduces, tell themselves all about them. And then they say, okay, got to move on.
Yeah. And classic example, this actually happened. It happens at an event out in Central Maryland that I go to regularly. An accountant shows up, walks around the room, handing everybody his cards, then he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even talk to people.
Just... Wow. That's a new level.
give me some final thoughts here on your view of visible expertise and ultimately the payoff for being a visible expert.
Well, I think the payoff, there's really two payoffs. I think one of them is you look at the business payoff, and there it's pretty unassailable. It makes it easier. The research clearly shows it makes it easier to generate leads. The leads you generate are more qualified. They are easier to close, and you have the ability to charge more per hour or per whatever unit you're billing than someone who's not a visible expert. And that's whether those leads are someone who's contacting you to partner with you or someone who from an agency who wants to talk to you, those kinds of things are much better. So from a business point of view, it is the proverbial no-brainer. However, there's another side to it that I think is important. It's so much more satisfying to be able to have an area where you really understand something and you really can be recognized for your intellectual contribution to something. It's kind of another level of fulfillment. Yeah, the business reasons are good, but the other part is the part that really keeps you excited to get up in the morning.
You know, the most exciting thing I think that happens to me is when somebody comes up to me 5, 10, 15 years later and says, you know, you spent X 15 minutes with me on this issue, or I read this in your book and it really turned me this way and I just wanted to thank you.
You know,
how do you explain the value?
How do you top that?
That's just so cool. Thank you again for coming in, Lee. It's always a blast to discuss these things. Lee can be found on LinkedIn. Spell your last name for the people so they can find you.
It's FREDERIKSEN.
No C.
No C.
No C. And you can find Lee on LinkedIn. You can find him at hingemarketing.com. There's a lot of information there. I am hosting a Building Your Subject Matter Expert workshop, your Subject Matter Expert Platform workshop, December 6th at the Maryland Center for Entrepreneurship. The information is on my blog. You can get to the blog through federaldirect.net. Again, I want to thank Lee for coming in. There's a lot of stuff that you can download from his website that can get you on the right path. But the thing that you need most is an area of expertise that's demonstrable. So
thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.